Nipad, Paramahamsa, Padraja, Gachar, Sotir, Sotir, Sri, Shimdas, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Iskand, Founder, Charya, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinda, Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga, Nama, Om, Vishnu, Padaya, Krishna, Padaya, Shemati, Bhaktivedanta, Swami, Dhanamayi, is the microphone loud enough?
Yes.
Okay. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So today, of course, is auspicious appearance day of the Bhagavad Gita, Gita Jayanti. So I want to speak about the Bhagavad Gita a little bit today, but first we'll go through rather quickly the verses for today, which I didn't realize we actually have two verses today, 24 and 25 of chapter 4, canto 3. So we'll do verse 24 responsively. Let's see here, where are we? Satam maha bhagavatam. Rajantam Kuru Varshava Vishram Bhad Abhyadatthedam Mukhyam Krishna Parigrahe Satang Mahabhagavatam Rajantam Kuru Varshava Vishram Bhad Abhyadatthedam Mukhyam Krishna Parigrahe Satang Mahabhagavatam Rajantam Karavarshava Vishram Bhad Abhyadatthedam Mukhyam Krishna Parigrahe. Others?
Satam Bhagavatam.
Satam
Bhagavatam.
Vaishnavis?
Thank you.
Vidura.
Vidura.
Tam.
Tam.
Anta Uddhava.
Mahabhagavatam.
The great devotee of the Lord.
Rajantam.
While going.
Kaurava
Rishabha.
The best amongst the
Kauravas. Vishrambhat.
Out of confidence.
Abhyadatta.
Submitted.
Idam.
This.
Mukhyam.
Unto the chief.
Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
Harigrahe.
In devotional service to the Lord.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
While Uddhava, the chief and most confidential amongst the devotees of the Lord, was going away, Vidura, in affection and confidence, questioned him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vidura was much older than Uddhava. By family relationship, Uddhava was a contemporary brother of Krishna's, while Vidura was as elderly as Krishna's father, Vasudeva. But although junior by age, Uddhava was much advanced in the devotional service of the Lord, and therefore he is described herein as the chief amongst the devotees of the Lord. Vidura was confident about this, and thus he addressed Uddhava in that higher category. That is the way of courteous dealings between two devotees. So I guess we also have verse 25. I'll just read through it. Viduru vacha dhyanam param svatva raha dhyanam param svatva raha prakasham yad aha yogeshvara ishvaraste vaktum bhavan norati yati vishnur grityasva dhyarta kutash charanti. Translation. Vidura said, O Uddhava, because the servants of Vishnu, the Lord, wander in the interests of serving others, it is quite fit that you kindly describe the self-knowledge with which you have been enlightened by the Lord himself. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The servants of the Lord are actually the servants of society. They have no interest in human society other than to enlighten it in transcendental knowledge. They are interested in imparting knowledge of the relationship of the living being with the Supreme Lord, the activities in that transcendental relationship, and the ultimate goal of human life. That is the real knowledge which can help society achieve the real aim of human welfare. Knowledge in the matter of the bodily necessities of eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing, transformed into various branches of advancement and knowledge, is all temporary. A living being is not the material body, but an eternal part and parcel of the Supreme Being. And thus revival of his self-knowledge is essential. Without this knowledge, the human life is baffled. The servants of the Lord Vishnu are entrusted with this responsible work, and so they wander over the earth and to all other planets in the universe. Thus the knowledge which was received by Uddhava directly from the Lord deserves to be distributed in human society, especially to persons like Vidura, who are highly advanced in the devotional service of the Lord. Real transcendental knowledge descends in the disciplic succession from the Lord to Uddhava, from Uddhava to Vidura, and so on. Such supreme transcendental knowledge is not possible to achieve by the process of imperfect speculation, as performed by the so-called learned mundane wranglers. Vidura was anxious to know from Uddhava that confidential knowledge known as Paramam Stitim, in which the Lord is known by his transcendental pastimes. Although Vidura was older than Uddhava, he was anxious to become a servant of Uddhava in the transcendental relationship. This formula of transcendental disciplic succession is taught by Lord Chaitanya also. Lord Chaitanya advises that one receive transcendental knowledge from anyone, whether a Brahmin or a Shudra, a householder or a sannyasi, provided that person is factually conversant with the science of Krishna. A person who knows the science of Krishna is factually a bona fide spiritual master. Om Gyanate Brandesha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Vitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Panchakalpatrubhishcha, Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha, Patitano Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Prabhupada. All right, so we're going to speak a little bit about these verses and then speak about the Bhagavad Gita. And as things would happen, not exactly by chance, but probably by Krishna's arrangement, they actually fit together real well. A lot of what I was going to say about the Bhagavad Gita really kind of applies here to these verses about Vaidura and Uddhava and the process of disciplic succession and hearing from advanced devotees and hearing this wonderful message that Krishna has given us. And it's really rather interesting because here we're talking about Uddhava hearing from Krishna and then his relaying or speaking that message. And of course, it's most elaborated in what we know as the Uddhava Gita, which is, how many chapters is it, 20? So, anyone know? It's a lot of chapters in the 11th canto. Most 11th canto is the Uddhava Gita, you know. And of course, we're talking about the Bhagavad Gita, which is Krishna speaking his 700 some verses to Arjuna. So these are very, very nice complementary topics to talk about today. The first thing Prabhupada talks about, and in the verse, is the relationship between Vidura and Uddhava. So Vidura was much older than Uddhava. Vidura was, of course, a brother of Pandu and Dhritarashtra, which would make him, the uncle of the Pandavas and people of that age, and Krishna. So he's like a generation older. Where Uddhava, as is described here, as a cousin of Krishna, is really the same age. In fact, he is the son of Vasudeva's brother, who I think is named Devabhaga. Does anyone know? Does that sound right? No. I only could find, it was hard to find, but I think at one place I found it said Devabhaga. As one of, Vasudeva had many brothers and sisters, as we know. There's lots of cousins and aunts and uncles in that whole family line. So Uddhava, interestingly enough, is not only the same age as Krishna, but he had the same bodily features. You know, he looked a lot. In fact, people had to kind of look twice when they saw Uddhava. Is that Krishna? And they, oh, no. I mean, you can tell. Krishna is Krishna. He's going to be absolutely one. He's a one-off. there's nobody like Krishna. But Uddhava really looked like Krishna. He had many of the same qualities. He even dressed alike. Like, remember when he first came to Vrindavan, and the gopis all kind of ran around the chariot. First they thought, oh no, is this Akura back again? because it was like the same kind of chariot. But then they said, who is this? He looks just like Krishna. He's wearing yellow garments. And then of course they realized it wasn't Krishna, but they all kind of gathered around quickly, very interested in his personality. So he is one of the most advanced devotees in our entire history, in our entire scriptures. He's unparalleled. So, in this verse, he's called Mahabhagavata. He's also called the chief and most confidential devotees by Srila Prabhupada. And so his position is really shown in many places in the Bhagavad Gita. And the reason we're spending a little time talking about the wonders and the glories of Uddhava is why would Vidura and even Maitreya, why would they want to hear from someone so much younger? It's kind of like you go to your children and say, I really need some wisdom and good advice from you. Now, we might do that if we have humility and then we understand their qualities, but usually it's the other way around, right? So, in other words, Uddhava had very superlative qualities to merit this kind of honor by much older devotees. Krishna speaks the entire philosophy to him practically in the Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto, as we all know, I think we're covering that recently. We covered about 5 years ago, probably, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But not only does it cover everything in the Bhagavad Gita, but of course it goes beyond. And there's two or three wonderful chapters, many wonderful chapters, that really describe devotional service, really specifically the process of devotional service. Coming up in a few days, just in a few verses, this is just one little part from the purport, 3.4.32, Prabhupada says, undoubtedly Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just to encourage Arjuna to fight. And yet, to complete the transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructed Uddhava. The Lord wanted Uddhava to fulfill his mission and disseminate knowledge which he had not spoken even in Bhagavad Gita. Now, this is interesting. I found this just doing a search today. And this is from a lecture of Srila Prabhupada in New York, 1966. Way back in the very beginning, he's speaking about some of these great devotees. And this is really a wonderful description of exactly
where Uddhava stands in kind of our pantheon of, you know, great devotees like that. Prabhupada says, he was a great devotee, Uddhava. He was more advanced than Arjuna. There are different grades of devotees. The first class devotees were, who's the very highest class of devotees? Gopis. The damsels of Vrindavan. Nobody could be compared to their devotional service. So next, there was Uddhava. Then Arjuna. These are which is very high up there. These are the different grades of devotees. So Uddhava was also a great devotee of the Lord, and he also was instructed, similarly, just like Arjuna was instructed. So anyway, some nice parallels there. So Krishna sends Uddhava to Vrindavan. After he leaves, he goes to Mathura. It's been a little while. The residents of Vrindavan are in great distress. Krishna knows this. He knows everything. And he probably even gets reports of that. They are suffering so much in the absence of Krishna. I was thinking about this recently. If you were with Krishna all the time, you know, this is in his, you know, his prakriti manifestation, you know, fully, he is there. Not some, you know, not super soul in the heart. This is Krishna, you know, in his full manifestation of beauty, of wonder, of sweetness in relationships. Think about Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj having their son with him all the time. And even when he was an adult, they still thought of him as just their little son, of course. And think of the gopis and their incredible relationship, a conjugal relationship of love with him, and the coward boys playing with him every single day. They probably got to spend the most time with Krishna, hours every day in the pasturing grounds, and playing wonderful games and relationships, and he leaves. He's gone. And not only is he gone, they wonder whether he's actually coming back. Even though he says, I will return, they begin to suspect maybe he'll never return. What an incredible blow. It's almost like your life becomes, you know, useless. And you can imagine now, I may never see Krishna again. So, of course, Krishna was very disturbed about this. He had to do what he had to do. He had to stay. And a number of reasons are given. First of all, his real parents, or his birth parents, we don't want to say his real parents, his birth parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, didn't have the opportunity to be with him in his childhood for 11 years, 12 years almost. So he had to spend some time, and also with all of his relatives, he had to give them comfort. They'd all been suppressed by the horrible rule of King Kamsa. So in other words, they'd experienced this demoniac, complete destruction of their entire, you know, their dynasty, and a lot of them fled to this part of the country and the other. A lot of these kings, they were in the dynasty, the Adus had to just leave. So anyway, he had to give comfort to all of them, reassure them. Of course, first he had to go and kill Kamsa, but then he had to spend some time there. And not only that, because he had killed Kamsa, whose father-in-law of his widowed wives, was none other than our old friend, Jarasandha, you know, the biggest demoniac ruler at the time. And so Jarasandha pledged, I am going to not only get back at Krishna, I'm going to wipe out the entire Yadu dynasty. So he had to stay, and he had to kill all of these demons, and there were a lot of them out there. And not only that, but he knew since they were personally, they targeted him personally, because he's the one who killed Kamsa. He dragged him down, you know, he did it. He was worried if he went back to Vrindavan, they would attack Vrindavan. And you know, all of his family members would be in great peril. So many, many reasons. And of course, it's all Krishna's arrangement. There's higher spiritual reasons in his whole flow of what he's doing on planet here. But at any rate, he had to stay. He knew they were in distress, so what does he do? Well, he sends Balaram, of course, but first he sends Uddhava. Now, why would he pick Uddhava? Because Uddhava's the greatest devotee. In other words, Uddhava was not only like a great devotee, but you know, he was a personal friend. It's described that Uddhava is in a mixture of Dasya and Sakya. So he sees Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has, you know, the absolute greatest respect and devotion for him, but he's also his friend. And not only his friend, but his main counselor. He's the one, you know, there's always somebody in your life, you know, like, I know if any of you have been in management, you know, it's nice if you have a friend you kind of, you know, kick ideas around with, or what do you think about this? How should we handle this? And Krishna would do this with Uddhava. Even though obviously Krishna knew everything and had the whole plan, he had it all mapped up. Remember when they were going to go to the Rajasuya sacrifice? And what happens at the same time, they're all in the assembly there in Dwarka, but a messenger comes in, and he talks about the all these princes that were locked up, and that they were completely imprisoned and miserable because they were locked up by who? Hmm? Can't hear you. Who was it? Was it Jarasandha, wasn't it? You know, in other words, Jarasandha had been killed yet at this point, right? Am I right on this? Okay, I'm not getting disagreement, so I guess that's right. I think it's right. So anyway, remember, because he had Bhima ended up killing Jarasandha, you know, that whole thing. So,
Narakasura.
Well, he had the ladies, right, the princesses, but these were the men. The men, I'm sorry, is princess plural. A prince plural is a prince, you know what I mean. Sounds the same. But it's a funny thing in the English language. But anyway, the male princes were captured by Jarasandha. And so now he's in a dilemma. And everyone says, yes, we must go and, you know, we must go and save them. Come on, Krishna, let's all go get, you know, save them. And then Narada Muni comes in and says, but Maharaj Yudhisthira really wants to do the Rajasuya sacrifice, and you have to be there because you're the main person. You're the person of honor. So what to do? How do I do these two things at once? Now, we all know from Krishna's pastimes that Krishna's expert at doing two things at once, right? He's always making all these arrangements so five different things happen. But what does he do? He turns to Uddhava. He says, Uddhava, you tell us, what should we do here? And Uddhava thinks, why is he asking me? Anyway, but he, of course, he's inspired in the heart by Krishna. He solves it for him. He tells the problem. He says, okay, he can't do the Rajasuya sacrifice anyway unless he's defeated all the kings, unless he's acknowledged as supreme. So what we'll do is we'll go and we'll take care of Jarasandha first, then go back. With that accomplished, you know, we'll do the Rajasuya sacrifice. Everybody thought, yes, great, a wonderful idea. So everybody appreciated he's not only a great devotee, but greatly intelligent. You know, he was like superb at everything. Great scholar. He was the disciple of Brihaspati, who was the, now that's really up there, because he's not the spiritual master of, you know, sages and saints on earth. He's the spiritual master of all the demigods throughout the whole universe. So anyway, Uddhava is recognized in all of these ways, you know, as being a... So anyway, we're getting back to where we were in the story. He is the one who was sent to Vrindavan. So what happens? He's sent to Vrindavan to comfort the residents because of his qualification. And he's the one who can really convey Krishna's message personally the best. Because Krishna wrote out what he wanted, you know, instruction, what he wanted to say. And he gave that message to Uddhava. But there was another reason. Because Uddhava was so advanced, he wanted Uddhava to understand the highest level of advancement, because he knew Uddhava was capable of this kind of spiritual insight, knowledge, realization. He wanted Uddhava to see and recognize and hear from the gopis and understand their level of advancement and their great love for him in separation. So he had both things he wanted to do, and that's exactly what happened. So he gives the message, Anyway, Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, chapter 46, says, Krishna, being his very loving friend, wanted to send Uddhava to Vrindavan just to study the highly elevated ecstatic devotional service practice there. Even if one is highly elevated in material education and the disciple of Brihaspati, he still has to learn from the gopis and the other residents in Vrindavan how to love Krishna to the highest degree. It was Krishna's special favor to Uddhava to send him to Vrindavan with a message for the residents there, which was meant to pacify them. So we go to the first night he spends with Yashoda and with Nanda, and he speaks to them, although he mostly speaks to Nanda, because Yashoda couldn't even hold a conversation. She's crying the entire time. But she's there, really, seriously. She's just basically in tears out of separation from Krishna. It was pathetic. But he speaks with Nanda, and he pacifies them to some degree just by hearing about Krishna. It's almost like, you know, we know that concept philosophically that Krishna is absolute. So when we hear about Krishna, Krishna's there, right? Krishna's there in his name. He's there in his pastimes. He's there in his form. So just hearing Krishna's pastimes is satisfying to some degree to devotees who are feeling separation from him.
Next morning, as I said, all the gopis come around and say, what's going on? They actually came to see Mother Yashoda every day because they comforted each other. The gopis and Mother Yashoda were very, very close because they had very, you know, similar closeness and total absorption in Krishna. So anyway, Uddhava was there. They say, let's go off somewhere we can speak privately to you. And he talks to the gopis. Now, two things happen. First of all, Radharani gives us the Bhagavad Gita. She starts speaking almost where it's like she doesn't trust him. What kind of messenger are you? And they're comparing to the bee and the whole bit. You all know that. So and there's 10 verses that comprise the Bhagavad Gita, by spoken by Radha. It's not mentioned by Bhagavatam, but all the acharyas say this is Radharani. And in those 10 verses, she displays 10 different stages or types of what's called Chitradalpa. And that Chitradalpa is the topmost stage of Mahabhava. So it's beyond Mahabhava. And Chitradalpa, it's so rare that I can't remember. There's one that only her and Lalita and Vishakha have, and then there's this highest one that only Radharani has, stage of prema, stage of pure love. So anyway, so he hears that. So he gets that opportunity that Krishna arranged for him to hear the highest possible stage of a devotee's, not just their love, but their love and separation. And of course, that involves the Chitradalpa and all the different ones. And sort of, sometimes they say speaking in madness, because you know, she'll go back and forth and kind of all over the place, and she speaks to the bee. So it's a messenger, then as though it's Krishna, then as though it's Uddhava. And then at the end, she's very angry at Krishna for leaving them. At the end, then she's sorry, and she just wants, you know. So, but this is the transcendental love that, well, I shouldn't say no one ever exhibited it, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did also, didn't he? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in Jagannath Puri, he exhibited a lot of these same symptoms because he was, of course, Krishna in the mood of Radharani. So after that, then Uddhava gives the message. And they become satisfied. They realize that they're never separate from Krishna. And he stays a few months to enliven the Vrajavasis with discussion of Krishna. I mean, I've talked about this before, that externally they didn't seem real happy with his message because they're saying, well, yeah, all your philosophy, super soul, your Krishna's everywhere, but we want him with us here personally. But they did understand, and that's described very elaborately in some of the different acharyas' commentaries in Prabhupada's too, in the 47th chapter of the 10th canto, of how they understood the presence of Krishna through Uddhava's instructions and in several different ways. And Prabhupada in the Krishna book says that they understood him in his bhava manifestation. So sometimes I think that we often, other acharyas would call that the aprakriti manifestation. In other words, not as Krishna personally there, but in his, you know, well, Prabhupada says his bhava manifestation or his unmanifested manifestation. You know, that's kind of a strange word combination too. At any rate, they felt, especially he spent in several months and they talked about Krishna continually and they really felt much better. So he had this full realization of the topmost position of the gopis. And he speaks, this is from Krishna book chapter 47. Uddhava says, therefore I wish to take birth as one of the plants or creepers in Vrindavan who were so fortunate that the gopis trample them. The gopis have so lovingly served Krishna Mukunda himself, the giver of liberation, who is searched after by great sages and saintly persons. But for his sake, they, the gopis, left everything, their families, children, friends, homes, and worldly connection. And then Prabhupada says that he appreciated the exalted position of the gopis and didn't even feel qualified to ask them for the dust of his lotus feet. So he said, just let me be a clump of grass so the gopis and the other devotees could walk on him. Okay, so finally in this purport of the, verse 24, it says that Uddhava described herein as the chief amongst the devotees of the Lord. Vidura was confident about this, and thus he addressed Uddhava in that higher category. That is the way of courteous dealings between the two devotees. And in the purport to text 45, that's continued, that idea, that it doesn't matter the position of a devotee. If a devotee is advanced in Krishna consciousness, then he's accepted as one's teacher, or guru, or mentor, as the case might be. So, while seniority is also important, after all, Uddhava then sends Vidura to speak with Maitreya, right?
We've discussed that before. In other words, he wants Maitreya, who is also, apparently Maitreya was there, and we covered that too, that he heard everything that Krishna spoke to Uddhava. So he had all the knowledge too. And so out of, you know, basically out of spiritual etiquette, Uddhava says, you should hear from Maitreya, because he's like your age, you know, where I'm much your junior. Of course, in his humility, he says that. But Vaidura, he wants to hear from Uddhava. He accepts Uddhava as his superior, that he was senior in spiritual knowledge, and Prabhupada explains that quite a bit. It doesn't even matter what caste you're from or from what, you know, where you come, what part of the world you are. You could even be an American, you know, be considered a devotee, you know, which is, I mean, when Prabhupada was writing this, he got so much pushback, you know, from people in India who didn't really want to recognize his disciples, his Western disciples, and Srila Prabhupada. So that's why you hear many times he writes about this, that it doesn't matter where you're from, it doesn't matter anything about your bodily identity. It's all about whether you are advanced in Krishna consciousness. If you know the science of Krishna, that is all that Prabhupada is saying. That is what is important. So he says, at the end, he says, a person is factually conversant with the science of Krishna. A person who knows the science of Krishna is factually a bona fide spiritual master. So that's a, you know, these are really important points that could spend a lot more time with. But I now want to shift a little bit over to talk about the Bhagavad Gita, the Gita Jayanti. Okay, take a breath. The importance of Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is one of the most important and widely read books in the world. Now, in my research, I found that it ranks fourth all time in terms of copies printed after the Bible, the Quran, of course. And thirdly is the quotations of Chairman Mao, that classic. I think that if you didn't have a copy of that in China, you'd be in trouble. So I think it was pretty much required reading for every one of the 1 billion residents in China. So anyway, but it's actually, sorry, the Bhagavad Gita, the BBT is like the fourth most, you know, most number of books published. And the BBT has printed Bhagavad Gita in 83 languages, and I don't know how many total Gitas. The best I could find is this year, we went over 500 million total books. Okay, BBT has published 500 million books. Sri Vrindavan is not here, is she? I was wondering what percentage might be Bhagavad Gitas, maybe a third or a quarter? You know, like when we're distributing books and stuff, a good percentage, right? Maybe a quarter. That's what I was thinking. Just from my experience, I'd say a quarter. So that would bring up to 125 million Bhagavad Gitas just of our publishing, the BBT publishing, have been distributed, and others also, of course. For instance, I guess in India, the biggest publisher is called Gita Press, and it said that they've sold 140 million Bhagavad Gitas, but they've been around for 100 years publishing books. So it's not Prabhupada's, of course, but I'm just saying Bhagavad Gita is extremely popular, and there's millions and hundreds of millions of Bhagavad Gitas in existence. And of course, we know, and not just in India, but even historically, so many great thinkers and spiritualists have expressed appreciation for Bhagavad Gita, like Thoreau and Emerson, Albert Einstein, Carl Jung, Aldous Huxley, Albert Schweitzer. They've all read Bhagavad Gita, at least some of it, and expressed great appreciation for it. I always like this quote. I think this was on the back of some of our books, or, you know, by Thoreau. In the morning, I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogenic philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, in comparison with which our modern world and its literature seem puny and trivial. That's nice, isn't it? Because that's exactly the truth. In other words, any mundane literature compared to Bhagavad Gita, puny and trivial. So, but what's more important to us probably, rather than numbers, is the spiritual significance. How does the Bhagavad Gita tell us? You know, what does it have to offer to the world? Of course, a great deal. I'm going to read from Bhagavad Gita 1.1. Dhritarashtra vacha dharmakshetra kurukshetra samaveta yutsavaha mamaka pandavaschaiva kim akuravata sanjaya. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do?
I always like that verse, and I, you know, the way it sets. I mean, I like the Sanskrit, even, you know, Dharma Kshetra, Kuru Kshetra. Purport. I'm going to read the first two paragraphs. Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatma, the glorification of the Gita. There it says one should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. The example of clear understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna, who heard the Gita directly from the Lord. If someone is fortunate enough to understand the Bhagavad Gita in that line of disciplic succession without motivated interpretation, then he surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and all the scriptures of the world. One will find in the Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will also find things which are not to be found elsewhere. That is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The topics discussed by Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, described in Mahabharata, form the basic principle for this great philosophy. It is understood that this philosophy evolved on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is a sacred place of pilgrimage from time immemorial of the Vedic age. It was spoken by the Lord when he was present personally on this planet for the guidance of mankind. So this is a real nice introduction to the Bhagavad Gita and talking about the importance of it to for the guidance of mankind. So Prabhupada explains the Bhagavad Gita defines things found in other scriptures. Like I say, yeah, a lot of scriptures talk about God, they talk about spirit, they talk about some of these things, but additional knowledge not found elsewhere. And I remember that's one of the things that struck me when I first read the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada's, how it all kind of sounded familiar to some degree, like, yeah, I've heard, that makes a lot of, but it was all new too. Anyway, that's an experience I had. It was kind of like, yeah, it's real familiar. I know all this, but I've never heard this before. At the same time, you know, so somewhere inside, you know, it stirs this, you know, remembrance of this wonderful philosophy, you know, even though it's something new that's not described in other scriptures. And, of course, it's called the perfect theistic science. Why? Because it was spoken directly by Lord Krishna. That's what they call it, you know, they call it provenance, you know, the where something comes from. About the best provenance you can get, something spoken by God himself to enlighten the living entities. So, Krishna says that he gives us knowledge, as both Prabhupada translates jnana vijnana, as phenomenal and numinous. So that means, and this is all that will to be known. Everything to be known, will be said. So that means spiritual and material. Or jnana vijnana. Vijnana means knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position, according to Prabhupada. And the Bhagavad Gita explains the relationship of the spirit soul with Krishna. So there's five specific subject matters in the Bhagavad Gita. And in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, which I think we have as a separate little book, don't we, that Civilization and Transcendence is called or something? I thought there used to be this other one about transcendence. It was basically Prabhupada's introduction. They also have a book just called Introduction. Okay, maybe they changed that because nobody knew what transcendence and, you know. Anyway, there are five subject matters, Prabhupada says. Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma, right? So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity, the material energy, time, and karma, or activity. So those are there, and that gives us a very, very sound introduction. That's kind of like, this is spiritual life. Sometimes Prabhupada says, you know, this is like the introduction, the ABCs, where, you know, or you could say it's the, it's more like a graduate degree, right? And what did Prabhupada say? The Srimad Bhagavatam is the advanced degree. Master's degree, and I guess the PhD would be Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? At any rate, this is just an analogy, because of course they're all absolute, but they go in more and more depth. But the wonderful thing about Bhagavad Gita is it's very hard for a person new to our philosophy to probably understand some of the parts of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's really meant for more advanced devotees. I think everyone can appreciate Bhagavad Gita. I mean, I remember the first time I read it, I thought I kind of understood a lot of it. I probably didn't, but, you know, at least I had the feeling that, you know, here was something very worthwhile
here was some very, very solid knowledge. It just explains it. This is what spiritual life is about. And the really important thing that Bhagavad Gita brings across is self-realization means knowing the self, but in relationship. Relationship to God, in relationship to the material energy, in relationship to other jivas. So that's not really discussed a lot in other scriptures. We don't hear, or a lot of times, you know, we're so infected with impersonalism throughout. And many people's introduction to, say, Indian philosophy or philosophy of the East really was impersonalism, wasn't it? You know, we're all going to be, you know, the soul, the spirit soul, the atma, self-realization. But God was kind of over here, not really known well. Where we understand, you cannot know the self without knowing the source of the self. You can't know the soul without knowing the super soul. You can't know the atma without the paramatma. It just doesn't work. You just get confused and often in some sort of bewildered, semi-quasi-spiritual and personal, you know, headspace that, you know, is just confusing to the living entity. Well, if you clearly understand these things, these basics, you're on the right path. You're on the way to self-realization, especially as it's presented by, as our purports we're talking about today, it must be presented by one who is a pure devotee. One who understands, who personally has realization of the philosophy, as Srila Prabhupada did, and hearing it from him and hearing from his purports, that makes all the difference. How many people read a copy of Bhagavad Gita before they read Prabhupada's? I know I did. Was real clarity make a lot of sense? Did you have any idea what they're talking about? No. We're all saying no, not really. It sounded good, right? Some kind of nice words there, but what did it really mean? Totally different than Srila Prabhupada. Coming in contact with the pure devotee of Bhagavan to understand Bhagavad Gita. Okay, Krishna comes when there is, of course, the decline in religion and predominance of irreligion. This is all described in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And he comes for three specific reasons, right? Paritsranaya, Sadhunam, Vinashaya, Chidushkatam, Dharma Samstarpanaya, Martaya, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. To deliver the pious, annihilate the miscreants, and to reestablish principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So Krishna really appears by his mercy. That's the main reason Krishna comes. Just like Prabhupada said in one of the purports, says, he didn't need to come to kill Kamsa, he really came to deliver Devaki. You know, he could have arranged for some physical element to kill Kamsa. That wouldn't be difficult. Could have had an earthquake or something. Take care of him. But no, he really came because of Devaki and Vasudeva. It's Krishna's mercy on the living entities, and specifically even the mercy for his devotees, that Krishna appears. He comes to give pleasure to his devotees. And in a very broad sense, all living entities are Krishna's devotees, right? Everyone is Krishna's devotee. Everyone is meant to be a devotee and go back to Krishna. So therefore, Krishna comes to reestablish religious principles. He does that by reciting the Bhagavad Gita, establishing religious principles, establishing the parampara, establishing all of these things to help the living entity come back to him. And then, of course, specifically to give pleasure to his great devotees, his pure devotees that are there. So, we understand that material world is a place of suffering. We understand birth, death, disease, and old age, the adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhotic miseries. And it's not that we have a negative view of life, but it's realistic. People who are suffering in this world, but they maintain this sort of delusion. It is a delusion. It's an illusion or a delusion where they are thinking everything is okay. Or the material world is really all right, and if I just kind of did things right in it or fixed a few things, I'd be happy. You know? It's kind of like happiness is just some fix away. But it's not, but it never happens. We can make that fix and we're still not happy, or some other misery comes along. Now, that doesn't mean that devotees aren't also going to experience some of those issues in the material world, but it's how we respond to them, it's how we understand them that makes all the difference. And that we have one solution for everything that happens, and that's to simply surrender to Krishna, to to take shelter in Krishna, to experience his love, his support, his guidance. And basically, we just, by surrendering to the lotus feet of Krishna, we experience his protection. And we see this in examples of so many of our great devotees. Even the residents of Vrindavan, the highest people at the highest platform, again and again, had to surrender to Krishna, right? Here's a demon coming. Here's a Keshi demon thundering through town here, you know, like it's going to destroy everything. They think of Krishna. Krishna's there. Krishna takes care of it again and again. So many examples. So the Vaishnavas understand the suffering, and we know the solution. And we also understand that it's our spiritual and really ethical duty to try to help others, to bring this to other people. It's kind of like if you, you know, now what's probably the most prevalent material disease or thing, probably cancer, I suppose, disturbs people the most. We've gotten rid of a lot of the epidemics, you know, people aren't dying of diphtheria and things like that anymore. But you get things like cancer. Now, what if I had a cure for cancer? Oh, I know how to cure, that's easy. There's this special herb that you take and everyone will be cured of cancer if they actually just take this herb. Say, oh good, when are you gonna put this on the market? Oh, I don't think I will. I don't really feel like it. Too much energy, you know. So I'm gonna let everyone die of cancer. It's kind of like that, and I'm talking to myself here, you know. You know, we have to really remind ourselves that we have the treasure. We have the cure. We have the cure for all, you know, all human diseases, and you know, all the simply everything that is disturbing to people, that is causing suffering, that is causing misery. So we have it, and it's easy. It's not like, okay, well, I got the cure, but this is going to be really difficult for you. It's going to cost you a few $100,000, you know, and you're going to have to go through all of this austerity, and you may or may not come out of it alive. No. We're telling people, chant Hare Krishna and read this philosophy. Take your shot at him. Now, those of us who have been around know that Krishna consciousness is a little bit more involved than that. You know, there's a little more to it, but that certainly gets us started. We all remember the story, the famous story of Srila Prabhupada and 26th Avenue in New York with a few disciples, and he's there in the Bowery, and the old bum comes walking in. He's been by a couple of times. He brings a roll of toilet paper and puts on the Vyasa sign and walks out. That was his gift to Srila Prabhupada. Now, one could become offended. What does Srila Prabhupada say? His spiritual life has begun. He did some little act of devotional service, giving something to Krishna's representative, the pure devotee. Therefore, he's on the path. It may not be this lifetime, but he is on the path. This is the tremendous mercy that Krishna has, and Krishna bestows this mercy via the devotees. Particularly, of course, the guru, the spiritual master, but all devotees, really. Because every devotee is a representative of their spiritual master who is in the civic succession, going back to Krishna, who gave us the spiritual knowledge originally. And the devotees are often willing to take great risks to help others. I mean, look at Haridas Thakur, whipped in 22 marketplaces. Did he become disturbed? No. He was only disturbed when his people inflicting the punishment became very upset that they're going to be in big trouble, you know, with the Qazi or the Nawab or something, because they weren't able to kill him. He says, oh, okay, then I'll die. So he, of course, goes unconscious. He's not dead, but, you know, and he's later revived. But, I mean, these are amazing stories of amazing devotees, and I don't think many of us could even pretend to ever come to that platform, you know, but still, it gives the kind of inspiration we need to know and know what's possible. Prahlad Maharaj, I mean, devotees said, well, and if we even look at outside of our tradition, Jesus Christ, I mean, crucified. So many devotees have in such great austerity. But in Kali Yuga, we have Sankirtan Jagya. The great austerity, of course, is chanting the holy name. Now, chanting the holy name also means, Prabhupada explained, also means giving out the message of God in forms of either preaching or his books about Krishna. In fact, he often would tell us how his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, said that the printing press was the Brihat Mridanga. Explained that, you know, that someone can hear your kirtan for a block or two, but you print these books and they can go all over the world. and they can change people's lives. And anybody, I mean, we hear these stories all the time. We hear these little nectar stories about book distribution or about how somebody has somehow received a book and it's changed their life in all kinds of circumstances. I mean, everybody's got these stories. And there's one devotee that was in Miami. There were two brothers there, and they were in Detroit, and they were car thieves. So they were out stealing the car. In the back of the car was a Bhagavad Gita. They read it, and they both became initiated devotees of Srila Prabhupada sometime later. I mean, it's like this, you know, and everybody's got these stories. I mean, they're countless, and they're true. Because there's this tremendous power of Srila Prabhupada's words, and the books are not different than his words. The Vani is the same as Srila Prabhupada personally. And we see that this is our long line. Writing and distributing books, Prabhupada said it's our family business, right? And what is our family? Our family is, this is the Siddhic succession. Start from Lord Chaitanya, his instructions to the six Goswamis. He instructed them what? Revive the places of pilgrimage, right? Install the deities, and most importantly, write books about Krishna consciousness. So the Goswamis wrote all these books. Now, they could have just wrote all those books and we did it and be happy with that, but no. When Jiva Goswami, they weren't all his personal disciples, but he was like the Shiksha Guru for three wonderful, very, very important devotees in our line, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, and Lokanath Maharaj, I think. And these people became our first traveling Sankirtan party, right? Jiva Goswami sent them out with a couple trunkloads of books to go to Oriya, I think they call Rissa or Oriya now, and to Bengal, and distribute books. There's all kinds of stories about that. The trunk was stolen, and you know, but that's for another day. Chaturatman could tell that. He's got that one down really well. But anyway, so, and then of course on down through, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote so many books. Bhakti Vinod revived Vaishnavism completely. It was like going nowhere in disrespect. He brought it back to the highest respect, and then his son Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. For, you know, he actually started temples all over India, and he tried to start temples in Germany and England, in London. He sent disciples there. They weren't successful, but he said, that's all right. He says, Abai will do it, which he did. So he knew Srila Prabhupada would accomplish his mission. And so Srila Prabhupada did. Srila Prabhupada not only came to America, sat down in the park and chanted Hare Krishna about devotees, but he remembered his spiritual master's instruction, which was, if you ever get money, print books, right? And Prabhupada did that to now where we have 500 million of Srila Prabhupada's books that have been printed and distributed. So we come to this amazing place of, I mean, talk about trying to fulfill the orders of your spiritual master. If nowhere else we can turn to Srila Prabhupada for incredible inspiration. What Srila Prabhupada did is one elderly Indian man coming to a foreign country, you know, and he knew the language, but he wasn't, what can I say, wasn't totally fluent, but the message got across. By his character, by his power, by his personality, by his perseverance, by his empowerment, by Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and his guru, everything happened. And it started with Bhagavad Gita. It was one of the first, he had the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam translated, which he brought in his trunk. But then one of the first things he wanted to do was get the Bhagavad Gita out there. And that's whole kinds of stories. And finally went to Macmillan and, you know, some wonderful stories about how that happened. But the Bhagavad Gita got out there. And then everything changed. Everything started happening. And people became devotees. And they started coming to this movement. So this is a great opportunity for everyone to try to help the conditioned souls in the material world and try to, in our own small, humble way, to do something to help Srila Prabhupada. Lord Chaitanya says, I'm only one man. How much can I do? He says, I'm the gardener, but I need so many others to come and help spread this movement, this Krishna conscious movement. So somehow, Lord Chaitanya could do it all, Srila Prabhupada could do it all, but we've been fortunate enough to be given an opportunity. They left a little bit left for us to do, right? We have a little bit left because there's about 10 billion people in the world. And something I was just thinking this the other day, I won't get too much into my personal issues, but I was thinking, well, what can I do? I'm here in Alachua, you know, and lots of devotees are already here. And I was thinking, well, let's see. There is 2,000 devotees probably in the Alachua area in this county, and that we can all preach to each other, enliven one another, help one another. And then I was thinking, what about the internet? And so I looked it up. You know how many people have access to internet in the world? 5.3 billion. Half the world's population now is online. Now, so there's really, I was thinking, there's really no excuse to, somehow or another, even if you can't go out and, by the way, I just heard from Prime Govinda today. He said he's out doing traveling Sankirtan with six bhaktas. They went out there distributing books for the Christmas marathon here. That was really wonderful. I mean, this is the first time I think we've ever had a Bhakta Sankirtan party going out for quite a while in Alachua, so that's great news, isn't it? Anyway, so many wonderful things are happening, and where are they? Didn't we even have cookies here of Arjuna and a chariot and the Bhagavad Gita? So this is a wonderful, auspicious day. We're going to be hearing and reciting the entire 700-some verses of Bhagavad Gita. And I just want to end this with, you know, this is Christmas, Christmas Spirit, Marathon, Gita Jayanti. If you haven't done it yet, and I haven't done it yet, I have to do it today. It's all at least by a case of Bhagavad Gita to distribute, or you all have plenty of places for the Bhagavad Gita to go? Yes?
Yes.
You have motels and you have so many places? So if we're not able to distribute them, if we just donate, you got plenty of good places for them, right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's all take the opportunity, Gita Jayanti, to do our little bit in helping Srila Prabhupada establishing Krishna consciousness around the world. And way over time, thank you so much for your indulgence. Hare Krishna. Glorious to Srila Prabhupada.
Can
you
just
leave
one comment?
Sure, go ahead.
The 84 languages.
Wait for the microphone.
Thank you so much for that wonderful class. So, just some statistics. We have 84 languages in which Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita is translated,
Yeah. Like
Afrikaans and Swahili and Zulu to whatnot. We have distributed 587 million books, Srila Prabhupada's books so far on the planet.
How many?
587 million plus.
Yeah, that's right. It was over half a billion.
Yes, like you said. I'm just adding facts.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah. In North America, Higher Taste was the best-selling book in 2019 and a few years before that. But we established a goal, BBD Trustees team led by His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu. So in 2019, we went from Higher Taste being the number one book to...
Yeah, I'm sorry, say that again.
Higher Taste was the number one book distributed at least in America, maybe worldwide. So from that, we started 2019 a campaign that Bhadra Purnima to Gita Jayanti, we will focus on Bhagavad Gita. So from 1 million, like next year about 2 million, approximately.
In North America or worldwide?
In worldwide.
Just
three months. 3 months. Then 3 million, and now the goal is 3.7 million. Books, Bhagavad Gitas, and that's plain Bhagavad Gita, small, big, large, hardbound. Motel Gita has done 900,000 Bhagavad Gitas. That's mostly North America. We are doing digital Gitas, so you can buy on Amazon right now. But BBT loses about 1/3 of the revenues when somebody buys a digital Gita online. So what we are trying to do. Is we are trying to do our own website where people will come and download a digital Gita. They will pay us, and whoever the book distributor has referred, you know, the points goes to him or her.
So is that they would actually get a digital version?
Yes.
Right. Which is what so many people are reading now. Like, I've got all the books I read on Kindle or, you know, read them on my computer or on my phone. Yeah.
Yes. And it's a very growing market, and then it is easy for books to go. So those are a few facts I wanted to
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for all your work and doing this and distributing Bhagavad Gita around the country. It's really nice. Sure can. Tell us about some of your insights in book distribution. Another day.
It's interesting when you ask the question, how many of us have read Bhagavad Gita prior to Prabhupada's, and it didn't have an effect. Is it okay to assume then that those Bhagavad Gitas that are not written or spoken by Srila Prabhupada are just as good as mundane books?
I think that's a little,
it's like not
I wouldn't go that far.
To the powerhouse.
Yeah. Now remember also there's also other devotees that have written Bhagavad Gitas, you know. I mean which But you're saying to someone who's not really a devotee of Krishna.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well they're definitely very limited. I mean Prabhupada's made that clear as far as the effect, you know, of because spiritual knowledge needs to be handed down by a bona fide representative of Krishna. I mean, of course they're seeing the name of Krishna and reading Krishna, so I can't say there's no effect. You know, there might be a little benefit, but I would say compared to reading Prabhupada's books or reading books by a bona fide spiritual master, very little bit.
Also, can you remind us how, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Uddhava comes, which devotee recommends or suggests that Uddhava receive more mercy? And what did Uddhava turn that over to? You get what I mean?
You tell me, I can't remember, I don't remember. The gopis?
Uddhava went up to the gopis.
Well, sent, makes sense,
but,
right?
But who recommended Uddhava? Who was just before?
He deferred to the gopis as his greatest.
Yeah, but who was before him?
Yeah,
it was the Pandavas, right. Because he was in that, with the Pandavas,
okay,
and then they went to Uddhava, Right.
Was for the Yadavas, Uddhava. And then Uddhava says the gopis.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. That's all consistent with what we've been reading from Prabhupada.
Except for the gopis, Uddhava is the highest recipient of Krishna's mercy.
Yeah, well, that's what Srila Prabhupada said. He said, gopis first and Uddhava.
Yes.
Right after.
And then Arjuna.
And Arjuna. You know, it's funny because Arjuna, very similar, because Arjuna and Uddhava, not only did Krishna, you know, give them directly, you know, in-depth spiritual knowledge, the Uddhava Gita and the Bhagavad Gita, you know, but they were both like Krishna's age. They were both in the same rasa, really, a mixture of friendship and servitorship. You know, they were both actually kshatriyas, in a sense. Uddhava doesn't, you don't see him going to battle much, but he was in a kshatriya family, you know. They're real similar. Jaraguru, and welcome to Alachua.
Thank you. I really liked your class, and I like the purport where Prabhupada mentions how Uddhava is basically more advanced than Vidura, although Vidura is older.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking how in ISKCON it's generally think, okay, Vaishnava etiquette. You know, you're initiated in 1972, and, you know, I'm initiated in 1975. You know, that person in 72 says, hey, I'm senior to you, you should respect me. You know, it's not cut and dry.
Yeah.
And it's not even cut and dry, you know, you have your guru Srila Prabhupada, and then someone else is initiated by a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, your god brother. I mean, it's the, I remember in the VIHE a long time ago, back in the early 80s, Bhakti Chu Maharaj gave a seminar on Vaishnava etiquette, and it's the highest determination if someone's to be respected is their knowledge.
Knowledge.
And, you know, and I remember I was in Mayapur for so many years, you know, 6 months of the year for 16 years straight, and me and Kadamba Kananda Swami were quite close. And when it was time for Tulsi, to water Tulsi, I'd be telling him to go first because, okay, I'm initiated by Prabhupada, and he was initiated by Jayadvaita Swami. I thought, so what? He's a sannyasi, he's older than me, and he has more knowledge than me. I tell him to go first.
Sure.
And he was telling me to go first. Yeah. So it was like a kind of a...
You can work that one out.
Yeah, we worked it. Sometimes I water first, sometimes he water first. But there's, anyway, it's one of these things where actually devotional service means humility and always deferring to someone else, not saying, I'm the most, you know.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's nothing really wrong with following the rules of etiquette. As long as the person who is receiving the honor doesn't think, oh, yes, I'm really deserving of all this honor. I mean, you know, when Krishna would come and see his parents, what would he do?
Pay his obeisances.
Pay his obeisances, you know. And, yeah, so, I mean, that Krishna showed a, you know, real strong example of that. I mean, Balaram was his elder. How about, he was actually, I always thought he was a year older, but turns out he's really like 10 days older, right? Balaram is in Krishna. He's not very much older.
No.
You know, but Balaram's the elder brother. You know, so there's certain a deference there. Although Balaram doesn't always think that way.
Yeah.
Balaram sometimes thinks of himself as his older brother, sometimes as his friend, playing with it, and sometimes as his servant.
His servant, yeah.
Yeah. And so it is an interesting thing. I would say a lot of the rules are sort of part of the Varnashram system, and a lot of our acharyas say that, you know, there's two sets of rules. Really do. Jiva Goswami talks about this a lot, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's one set of rules which is sort of the Varnashram rules. And then there's another set of rules which are Vaishnava. And Vaishnava doesn't have very many rules like that. Not a lot of little intricate detail. There's a few that are very important. Like you don't commit offenses against devotees, other devotees. That's a Vaishnava rule. But all the elaborate rules and regulations, not so much. At a certain point, at least. Yeah. So, yeah. It is an interesting point. I suppose but we see the etiquette's followed. The Srimad Bhagavatam, so we follow it. I was thinking that Bhaktivedanta Swami is kind of like that. I was thinking about him the other day because I was reading something he wrote, which is just brilliant. I mean, if you know Bhaktivedanta Swami, I mean, he's like, you know, the super intellect, the Russian sannyasi. But he wasn't a Prabhupada disciple. So remember, he's a GBC member. He would always give us so much deference. You know, anyone who was a Prabhupada disciple, he was like, and even when he had to do matters of conduct or problems we'd have in the GBC, like he wouldn't want to ever be in a position where he had to say anything negative about a, you know, a Prabhupada disciple. And once I had to say to him, Maharaj, you're on this committee, you got to do it. You know, just think of your service, even though you're personally very humble about doing this, you know. These are symptoms of advanced devotees, right? It's not a fault. It's part of their glory. It's part of, you know, their humility. It's there. Okay, I think everybody's had enough. Oh, okay. Stitchy-D.
I always had this, like, philosophical question. I thought maybe I should ask if it's bona fide or not, you know? So
okay,
I always had this philosophical question on my mind, and I thought maybe I should check if it's bona fide or not. If someone took Rikpit initiation from Lord Brahma, wouldn't that make him senior to everybody except maybe Narada Muni?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah.
That would solve a lot of problems.
Thank you for that one. I think that a lot. Well, what's the answer? Which is one of the reasons why the Rikpit philosophy kind of falls apart when you get into it too far, you know? You know, there's a point where it just doesn't make any sense. It's kind of like one Prabhupada Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says, sometimes devotees say that they have trouble studying impersonalism, that they can't understand it. He says, well, of course you can. It doesn't make any sense. Something you can understand, make sense out of. Okay. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.